Good morning, everybody, and thank you for joining us. And the topic that we're going to speak about this morning and hopefully next week again in the part two is about Jewish vacations. I want to point out a couple of very important points that some of us may not be aware of or may not always remind ourselves of adequately enough. So let's begin. The Mishnah writes, Pirkei Avos. Pirkei Avos, we have a list of 48, the Memches Kinyanei HaTorah. Memches Kinyanei HaTorah are the things that we are obligated to make sure that we take care of before we properly are Mekabel HaTorah. Each one of them describes a very different character trait. Each one describes something which is an important aspect, an element of perfection that we have to take care of before we receive the Torah. In this list of 48, so there is one attribute that we're told is miut sicha, simply understood to mean, person shouldn't have so much time idle chattering and wasting time. Similarly, the Mishnah says, one of the attributes, one of the things we have to work on is miut shina, which means also, person shouldn't sleep so much, because if you sleep too much, you're not going to be able to accomplish as much as you should throughout the day. That's the simple understanding. The simple understanding of the Mishnah, if we stop there, is telling us that a person always has to make sure to cut back a little bit from the pleasures of life in order to be truly successful. However, if you look there in the Tiferes Yisrael, which is on the page of every Mishnayis, if you look there on his commentary, he writes a very novel but an extremely critical pshat in understanding what it means, miut sicha and miut shena. And the way he explains it is as follows. You know, when I was in yeshiva, when I was in Eretz Yisrael, there was a group of people who used to talk about, you know, in the good old days, we used to have boys here who would sleep the 2-3-2. Now, I had no idea what the 2-3-2 was, but apparently they slept 2 hours, were up 3 hours in the middle of the night to learn, and then went back to sleep for 2 hours. Apparently that worked. It's a very nice idea, and it's very wonderful. However, after a while, everybody knows you get sick from that, and everybody knows that that doesn't work, and everybody knows that in the end, you just wear your body down, and it's not really the way you're supposed to be living life. Says the Tiferes Yisrael, that's what it means, miut sicha and miut shena. A person shouldn't think just because you're enthused or you're enthralled with your learning or you're so into an idea or you're into a project or you're working on something, you shouldn't think that the way to be successful is by depriving yourself of sleep or by depriving yourself of a social life. That's not the answer to success. Says the Tiferes Yisrael, a person always has to remind themselves that miut sicha is also important. A person always has to have at least a little bit. You have to create an outlet for yourself, at least to have a little bit of a social life, even though you're trying to be successful and you're trying to work toward your goals and you're doing all sorts of different things, but the Tiferes Yisrael reminds us that it's important to have miut sicha and miut shena. A person should not limit their sleep. A person always has to make sure that they do not deprive themselves too much, because that is not a way to be successful. You have to sleep, you have to relax, you can't be too intense, too excessive. A person always has to make sure to do everything in the right balance. We're told in Parashas Bamidbar a lot about the encampment of the Jewish people throughout the sojourn in the Midbar. Throughout their travels in the Midbar, there were 12 Shvatim who were all going, each in their specific place. Each one had a flag. Everyone was doing their own thing. And each one had a highly distinguished leader. As we know, they were all traveling. Saviv Lamachana Yiso. They were all traveling around the encampment of the Mishkan, around the Aron. That was basically the focus. Kasher Yachanu Ken Yiso Ish Al Yado L'Digleihem. That's what we're told. But there, in the context of the Psukim, which describe this experience of traveling in the Midbar, we're told that Kasher Yachanu Ken Yiso, the way they traveled is the way they camped. I saw an insight into this pasuk, which means that perhaps, and when you talk to people, I think it's true both physically and psychologically, that perhaps in order for a person to be able to be most successful in the days when you're Yiso, when you're traveling, when you're working, when you're doing, and you're trying to accomplish all the different things, Kasher Yachanu Ken Yiso, as much sleep as you get, as much relaxation as you get, that's also going to help you propel forward and be successful in your business, in your traveling, in your doing. And a person always has to make sure that everything is in moderation. And even though sometimes we feel that I can't take a break and I can't take off because I'm too busy and I have so much to do, but we have to understand, if you take a step back, in the overall scheme of things, in the overall perspective, obviously it will help us. That's something that should not be underestimated, something that should not be undervalued, and it's something that we take very seriously. It is a Jewish concept. Kasher Yachanu Ken Yiso is a Jewish concept. And certainly nowadays, when there's no such thing any longer as a 9-to-5 job, we all know that very well, there's no such thing anymore. And we also know that even when you come home, you're expected to respond to emails, and even on the weekends, and if you don't respond, you're all of a sudden going to get a text or an email or a phone call asking if everything's okay and wondering where you are. Our society expects us to be on at all times, and it's something that we should take with a little bit more of seriousness nowadays. How much are we investing in our kashiyachanu keniso? How much are we investing in our miyatzicha, in our miyatshena, to give ourselves a chance to air out, to refresh ourselves, to reinvigorate ourselves, to think a little bit about where we're going and where we're holding and what we're doing and how much time we're spending with our children and how much we're doing in the right way instead of the wrong way. It's something that we should consider. It's in Parshas Bahaloscha, we're told a lot of different halachos. It's a fascinating parsha. But one of the things that we're told is about the Pesach Sheni. And the Pesach Sheni is something that is given for somebody who missed the opportunity to bring Pesach Rishon. Now, why did they miss the opportunity? The Pasuk says, either because you were a Tamei, either you were not fit to enter into the Beis HaMikdash and eat Karbanos, or B'derech Rechoka, or you were in some faraway place and you weren't able to make it, and by the time Pesach came along, you weren't able to make it back to Yerushalayim in time to Shech Karban Pesach. Says the Pasuk, what about the third category of people? What about the people who, Va'ish, Asher Hu Tahar, the person was not Tameh, there was no reason why he couldn't enter the Beis HaMikdash. U'v'derech lo haya, and you were not on the road, so there was really no excuse for you not to be offering the Karban Pesach Rishon on the proper time. What's your story? What's going to be with you? The Pasuk says you do not have another opportunity to bring Pesach Sheni simply because you decided on your own that you chose not to bring the Karban Pesach Rishon, therefore there's no second chances for you. The Vilna Gaon quipped on this Pasuk, a beautiful insight. He said, obviously it's not the simple understanding of the Pasuk, but he said, read the Pasuk a little differently. Let's say you have somebody who is Tahar, Uba Derech, and he's traveling. Lohaya. There never was such a thing. Said the Vilna Gaon. Now the Vilna Gaon was not known for his jokes, but the Vilna Gaon over here pointed out that perhaps we should think about it. A person who is on the road and traveling, and he still remains a Tahar, Lohaya. That's something that's a very uncommon phenomenon. It's something that we don't find often, because very often, even though we live very Erlicha lifestyles, and even though we try our best to keep to the highest of kashrut standards when we're home, and even though we do everything Kedasu Kedin the way we're supposed to, but very often when we go out on the road, sometimes, you know, we're not as meticulous, and we're not as careful, and we are not the way we're supposed to be, and we're not the way we are at home. We're not living up to the standard that we set for ourselves, and perhaps, says the Vilna Gaon, that's something to consider. And I think when you consider that idea, that's perhaps another idea in Kasher Yachanu Ken Yiso. The same way that we would encamp at home, the same way we would live up to the kasher standards in our own homes and the Shabbos preparations in our own homes and all the laws of Shabbos in our own homes, Ken Yiso, that has to be the same level of observance, the strict level of observance that we keep when we're on the road as well, when we're traveling, when we're taking our time off. And as much as we want to make sure that we take time to relax and we take time to give ourselves a chance to air out and to reinvigorate ourselves and to propel ourselves forward, it's also important that we make sure that we always stick to the standards of Kasher Yachanu Ken Yiso. The same way we would be at home is the way we have to act when we're on the road as well. So let's just go through a couple of points, which I'm sure are very obvious, but I just want to review some of them because sometimes we're not as scrupulous and meticulous with these issues as we should be. So today we'll talk about some issues. Next week we'll talk more about kashrus issues on the road and how do you kashrus certain things when you go certain places and using the coffee machines in the hotels and all sorts of important things like that. So we start, our first issue is about the importance of tefillah b'tzibur. It should not be understated, the importance of tefillah b'tzibur. And you look in the Gemara in Brachos Daf Ches, where the Gemara says, Amar Rav Yochanan Mishim Rav Shimon ben Yochai, Ma'idichsiv, what does it mean? Va'anis v'ilasi l'cha Hashem eis ratzon. What does it mean that we should offer a tefillah and it should be at an eis ratzon? What exactly does it mean? What is the eis ratzon? How are we supposed to know what that is? Says the Gemara, B'shah shehatzibur mispalim. That refers to the time when the tzibur davens, which means we all want certain things in our lives. We all want to be successful and we all want to have nachas from our children and we all want to have good health and we all want to have all the wonderful things that we ask for. When is the eis ratzon to ask for that? B'shah shehatzibur mispalim. If we really want that God should answer our prayers, sometimes we don't always get what we want. But if we really want to have a fair chance at God answering our prayers, it's b'shah shehatzibur mispalim. That's the time to offer the prayer. That's the time to offer the tefillah. Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Chanina, Amar Mehacha. Ka Amar Hashem, be'eis ratzon inesicha. I answered you at a time which is considered an eis ratzon. Rabbacha, Rabbi Chanina, Amar Mehacha. Hein kel kaber lo yimas. God will not ever turn away from the tefillah of a tzibur. That's what the Gemara goes on to tell us. Amar Reish Lakish, Kol Mishi Yeshlo Beis HaKnesses Be'iro Ve'eno Nichnas L'Sham, Nikra Shachein Ra. Somebody who has a shul in their proximity and chooses not to go to shul for whatever reason, Nikra Shachein Ra. Okay, so you'll say, what's a big deal? So we call you a bad neighbor? No. So you call him a bad name? No big deal. Says the Gemara, it doesn't stop there. Lo Od Ela Shegorem Galus Lo Ulebanav. Shegorem Galus Lo Ulebanav. Is it really worth it? You have a shul in your close vicinity, in your own close proximity, close to your home, and you choose not to go, Gorim lo galus lo levanav. Frightening statement. Amr le Rabbi Yochanan, ikasabi bebavel. They told Rabbi Yochanan, we're surprised. Why are there people who have longevity in Chutz La'aretz? Doesn't it say, Leman yirbu yimeichem bimeven echem al ha'adama? You only have longevity in Eretz Yisrael. So why do we have a phenomenon that people are having long lives even in Chutz La'aretz, outside of Eretz Yisrael? He said, you know why? Because d'mekadmi mechashchi ve'ayli lebeik nishta, because they make sure to get out of bed and go to shul and daven with a minyan. That's the reason, that's the ticket to have longevity. We all want long life. We all want healthy life. The Gemara tells us, you want to make sure you have it? You want to ensure yourself a place? Make sure you go to shul and daven with the tzibur. And then the Gemara says, "Kol haragel lovei lebeis haknesses," if there's somebody who tries to go as much as they can, and one day he doesn't show up, HaKadosh Baruch Hu shoel alav. The Ribono Shel Olam himself asks, where are you? Did you have a good excuse not to show up? Not so simple. God doesn't ask questions about us for everything. The Gemara says over here, God asks, if we don't show up to shul and daven with the minyan, God is wondering where we are and why we haven't shown up. And it's an answer that we're going to have to give. The Rambam even says in Hilchos Tefillah, in the beginning of Perek Ches, Tefillas HaTzibur Nishma'as Tamid, says the Rambam. The Tefillah of a Tzibur is always listened to. God never turns away from that. Va'afilu Hayabahem Chotim, if we are at a level of decadence, even if we are at a level of immorality where God really should not accept our prayers, He shouldn't listen to our tefillah, still says the Rambam, Afilu Hayabahem Chotim Ein HaKadosh Baruch Hu Mos B'Tefillas and Shal Rabban. The Ribono Shel Olam will never turn a blind eye to the tefillah of a Tzibur. So, what if a person simply cannot make it to shul? And you have a really good excuse for not making it to shul. Obviously, we see that tefillah b'tzibur is something that's very important, but what if you can't make it? So the Tur writes, based on the Gemara, that not only do we consider it to be an ace ratzon at the time that the tzibur is davening and in shul, but the Tur says, second best is, if you cannot make it to shul, you at least should try to make sure that you daven at the same time that the tzibur is davening as well. Then at least you have some aspect of tefillah b'tzibur. Rebbe Tzvi Frommer writes in his Shalos HaTshuvos Eretz Tzvi, he has a very enlightening paragraph there where he talks about the importance of tefillah b'tzibur, and he says, yeah, maybe you're right that your grandfathers and your great-grandfathers didn't used to make sure to go to davening as much as they could or as much as they should. However, he says, nowadays, when we have such a difficult time having kavana, when we have so much distraction, when we have so much impediment, we have so much in the way from allowing us to really pay attention properly, says Rebbe Tzvi Frommer, we're told in Shulchan Aruch that even if a person doesn't have kavana, but you go to shul and you daven with the tzibur, God will accept your prayers even though you weren't mechavin. Even though you didn't have proper kavana in your tefillah, still God will listen to your prayers. What do you see, says Rebbe Tzvi Frommer, nowadays, when we cannot have kavana for anything, when we cannot even focus for 5 minutes during Shemona Esrei, we cannot even focus our attention when we're asking for things that we know we need. Is it any wonder why we try and push tefillah b'tzibur more than ever nowadays? We need that. We need that schus. If the promise is that God will listen to our tefillah even without kavanah when we daven with the tzibur, we need the schus nowadays more than ever. And that's what Reb Tzvi Frommer points out in his Sefer Eretz Tzvi, and it's so important. The Rivash writes, one of the Rishonim writes in his Tshuva Sefer, Me'ez Husar HaTamid, he says, from the time that the Ribono Shel Olam took away the Karban Tamid and the Beis HaMikdash, Haya Kapar L'Nafshosenu L'Kale HaPesha. We still have an answer to get rid of our averus, to get rid of our iniquities. He says, La'azavnu Elokeinu, God has not left us. We shouldn't make that mistaken impression and think that God has left us and now we're on our own. Hishu Lanu Bracha, He left us over a gift and a blessing. And you know what that is? Avoda Shavalev Shezu HaTvila. God has, in His kindness, in His wisdom, He has given us, even at a time when we don't have a Beis HaMikdash, He has given us a way that we can still connect with Him, that we know that He's still here, that He's still listening to us, and that is through the vehicle of Tvila. Ume'ez gala kavod beis mikdashenu haya beis hatfila yikare mikdash ma'at. This is why we call it a mikdash ma'at. A beis haknesses is called a miniature beis hamikdash, because this is our way of connecting. This is our way of really showing God that we're still interested in Him and He's still interested in us. L'kayim ha'shanemar v'nikdashti b'soch b'nei Yisrael. Ve'ata shamati v'hugadli, says the Rivash in the times of the Rishonim. And now I'm hearing, I cannot believe it, he says. Ki yesh b'nechem tzas ha'nashem asher ba'atzas Libam Shogim Laterf, there are people who are going after their own hearts and making their own decisions. I cannot believe it, he says. Velo yidnu lev lalechas lebeis hatfila. And they're not taking up the time or the effort to go and show up in the shul. Lekabel aleim ol malchus shamayim betoch hacheim. They're not willing to go and be mekabel ol malchus shamayim together with everybody else while the rest of the tzibur is being mekabel ol malchus shamayim and davening. Lachein tazhir bahem etodiyam asher amr chazal. Ein tfilaso shel adam nishmas ela bebeis hakneses. Says the Rivash, remind these people that the Gemara tells us the only way your tefillah is going to be answered is if you put yourself together with the tzibur. It's only if you show up in the shul and you daven together with them and you offer your tefillahs together with everybody else, that is the way that you have a fair chance in offering a tefillah and that tefillah actually being answered. The Aderus writes in one of his svarim also that he tried so hard throughout his life to gather a minion to make sure that he was always davening tefillah b'tzibur, and he says, "Be'im espala la'atzmi, if I ever had, I was on the road or whatever it was and I could not daven on my own, ki'ilu lo espalati klal, I always felt as if I'm not davening at all." Because that's what the Gemara tells us. If a person chooses not to go to a shul, you really are risking the risk. You're running the risk of a person's tefillah really not being answered, really not being listened to the way it should be and the way we want it to be. So it's something really to consider. I always find it fascinating that when you have somebody who unfortunately is in Avelus, you have somebody who's saying Kaddish, they will stand and get up to the other end of the world to make sure that they have a minion, that they're able to say Kaddish, doesn't matter where they are, how they are, what they're doing. Why is it that when we go on vacations, all of a sudden it doesn't matter if we're not in Avelus? Why is there a difference? I don't think there's any difference. I haven't seen anywhere in Shulchan Aruch or in any of the Nosei Kelim that there should be any difference. It's clear that we have an obligation to daven tefillah b'tzibur. It's clear that we do not have a heter. It doesn't say anywhere that we have a heter to go on a vacation, especially nowadays when there are so many opportunities to go on vacations in ways that we can make sure that we make every minyan b'tzibur. I don't find anywhere that we have any opportunity to forget about tefillah b'tzibur and to be lax about it. Kasher yachanu ken yisel, the same way that we would have the obligation to daven tefillah b'tzibur and we would never wake up one day at home and just say, you know what, today I'm not going to shul. I don't think we have any heter to go somewhere else and not have the same scrupulence and not have the same attention given to the tefillah b'tzibur that we would at home. Reb Chaim Volozhiner writes in his sefer Ruach Chaim, "Al tihi rasha b'fnei atzmecha." The simple understanding of the Mishnah is we shouldn't be so down on ourselves. "Al tihi rasha b'fnei atzmecha." Don't always say that, "Oh, I'm such a nothing, I'm a nobody," because it's going to lead a person to feel that they have nothing to contribute, and that's not the case. Everybody has what to contribute. "Al tihi rasha b'fnei atzmecha," says Reb Chaim Volozhiner. Perhaps what it means is very different. What it means is "Al tihi rasha b'fnei atzmecha" means don't daven tefillah b'yichidus, because that's being a rasha b'fnei atzmecha. You decide that you think you're good enough to daven at home, and you think it's good enough, and God's going to listen to you, God's going to answer your prayers. I don't know, says Reb Chaim Volozhiner. Not only that, we do find in some mepharshim that they write that tefillah b'tzibur is not only has all the wonderful milos that we spoke about, but they say it's also a skula for parnasa, which maybe that will make us a little bit more encouraged to think carefully about tefillah b'tzibur, but some say that this is the reason why it says va'avadatem es Hashem Elokeichem. It says va'avadatem es lashon rabim, it's in the plural, which means we should all be eved Hashem together. We should all serve Hashem together. And then right afterward, the pasuk says uveirach es lachmecha ve'es meimecha. If you serve Hashem together and you come to the tzibur and you come to shul, that everyone should daven together as one tzibur, then beirach es lachmecha ve'es meimecha. In return, God will make sure to give you the lechem and maim. The Beis Yosef writes, the Shulchan Aruch writes in one of his tshuva, one and only tshuva sefer, the Avkas Rochel, he writes also that in his time there were people who decided that they weren't going to take tefillah b'tzibur seriously. And the Beis Yosef writes that he issued a knas on them, he issued a penalty on them, and he actually made them pay an extra fine to the community for not showing up to shul, because he felt that this was such an egregious error on their part and they're not taking it seriously enough. So he felt that it was a reason to even issue a penalty on these people. So that's something number one. I think it's something that very often gets overlooked, and it's something that there's a lot of oversight about, and it's something we really should do everything that we can, especially nowadays when there are minyanim so readily available in all the vacation spots that we, not all, but so many of them that we can find. It's something that we should do our best really to try and plan accordingly for. The second issue that I think is of very great importance is about Big Day Shabbos. The Gemara tells us in Masechah Shabbos, Daf Chafei Hamid Beis, that Big Day Shabbos is a mitzvah. The Gemara first thinks maybe it's only a reshus, maybe it's only something that is voluntary, you have a right to wear nicer clothing on Shabbos, but you don't really have to, says the Gemara. No, the conclusion is that it's a mitzvah. And then the Gemara goes on to say that the Tanoim used to spend a lot of time getting ready for Shabbos, and they would do everything they could to buy the most beautiful clothing. The Gemara in Shabbos, Kuf Yud Gimel, then says, we are not supposed to have the same clothing that we would wear on Shabbos as we would wear during the week. That's what the Gemara tells us. The Shulchan Aruch even says that we go so far, the Magen Avraham says, even the jacket that we wear should be different. The Shulchan Aruch Harav says, even the belt that we wear should be different. There's a big discussion about the shoes, whether we have to change those or not, but there is certainly a important focus that's given on Big Day Shabbos. And when we go away as well, it's something to keep in mind. The Mishnah Berurah even says, even if a person is yichidi b'Shabbos, even if nobody else is going to see me, but the fact that Shabbos HaMalka has come to visit me, the fact that Shabbos is coming, so to speak, to spend the 24-hour period with me, I have an obligation to reciprocate and to show Shabbos that I respect her and that I do everything to show the dignity of Shabbos, even if I'm going to be yechidi, even if I'm going to be in my hotel room alone. Still, I have an obligation to put on Big Day Shabbos if I am ushering the Shabbos in properly. That's what the Gemara tells us. That's what the Shulchan Aruch says as well. I know that Rav Soloveitchik, there's an interesting story. You can argue whether it's correct, lahalacha or not, but he just was trying to prove the point to this person. Rav Soloveitchik used to give a shir every Shabbos afternoon, and there was somebody who used to walk from the other end of town. So in the hot summer months, the person walked without a jacket, without a tie, without a hat, and a polo shirt, whatever it was, because he was walking from the other side of town. It was very hot. So he showed up to the shir. Rav Soloveitchik said, "What kind of way is this to show up on Shabbos?" So he said, "What do you mean? I was walking from the other end of town. It's so hot." So Rav Soloveitchik said to him, "It's better that you stay home and don't come to the shir. Big Day Shabbos is more important than my shir." So it's arguable whether or not Big Day Shabbos really outweighs Liman HaTorah, whether or not going to Rav Soloveitchik's shir is better than Big Day Shabbos, but he was trying to prove the point that the be-all and end-all is not learning Torah. Sometimes you have to make sure that you are appreciating Shabbos the way you're supposed to, that you're respecting Shabbos and giving honor to Shabbos the way you're supposed to. And on vacation, that's something to keep in mind as well. If we have a minyan on our vacations, so very often we'll go to a hotel and they'll make a private minyan, we go with a group of friends skiing or whatever it is, so it's important to keep in mind that that is not a minyan kavua. Even if we have a Sefer Torah, even if we have an Aron Kodesh, which I would hope that we have that, but still, even if we do, that is not a minyan kavua. What does it matter whether it's a minyan kavua or not? It makes one major difference on a Friday night davening. If we have a minyan together on Friday night, and the minyan comes together even with the Sefer Torah, and it's a wonderful thing if we can do that. So the Shulchan Aruch tells us that on Friday night, the halacha is one is supposed to say Vayichulu, and after Vayichulu, we have the practice that we say Bracha Achas Me'ein Sheva. What we do on Friday night is we repeat, so to speak, we have a quasi-Chazaras Hashatz. Big question whether or not it's really a Chazaras Hashatz. It's not clear exactly if that's what it serves as. There are some major differences whether or not it is or it's not. But basically, we have this practice to say Vayichulu and then followed by a quasi-Chazaras Hashatz afterward on the end of the Friday night davening. What is the reason why we instituted a Chazaras Hashatz on Friday night? We never have that on the rest of the nights of the week. So the Rambam writes and the other Rishonim tell us the reason why is because the shuls used to be out in the fields. And it was very dangerous to walk out to the field. So they were concerned, what if a person is rushing on Friday night and they get to shul a little bit late and now shul is going to be over, they're going to have to walk back by themselves. It's going to be very dangerous. So you know what? They figured out, how are we going to add a little bit to the davening? How are we going to extend it Friday night in order to make sure that people are not going to be left alone in shul? And if somebody's quickly finishing up Shemona Esrei, they'll have an extra couple of minutes to be able to finish up with everybody else and then walk home together with everybody else. So what they decided is they're going to institute a quasi-Chazaras Hashatz on Friday night. This way, nobody's going to be afraid to walk home alone because we're going to give people an extra couple of minutes, even though nowadays we say it so fast, it really doesn't give people that much extra time. But still, that's the reason why it was originally instituted. Well, since that was the institution, the halacha is when you have a minyan she'eno kavua, when you have a minyan that doesn't meet regularly, and it just happens to be, we have a shever brachas this Shabbos, so we're meeting in a hotel and we're all davening in one shul, or we're coming to a vacation and we're all going skiing. Friday night we all meet together in the lobby of the hotel and we all make a minyan, even with the Sefer Torah. The halacha is that we generally do not say that Chazaras Hashatz on Friday night because it was never instituted in such a case. It's highly improbable that when you have everybody coming to one place together to daven and they're there for one sole purpose because they're all going skiing or they're all there for a Shever Brachas, it's highly improbable that anyone's going to be afraid to walk back home because we're all in the same place together. So this is the reason, something to keep in mind, if you have a minyan on Friday night in a vacation spot, which is not a minyan kavua, the halacha is that you would not say the Bracha Achas Me'en Sheva, you wouldn't say the Chazaras Hashatz, even though you would say Vayichulu. So what you do is you, after Shemona Esrei, you say Vayichulu, then you go straight into Kaddish. You skip the rest. That's a very important question. The Rambam in the Tshuva discusses, what about during the week? It seems that during the week, the Rambam first says that during the week, Ma'ariv is only a Rishus. Yeah, so therefore, what about if I come to Ma'ariv anyway? Not so satisfactory the answer. It's a very important question that the Rambam raises. And the Rambam in the Tshuva says that maybe it's because during the week, people used to be so busy, they didn't really make it out to shul. There was a minyan mincha Ma'ariv time, and they didn't really make it. There were no lights, so they weren't able to walk out so late at night. So if you weren't home from work at 4 o'clock in the winter, so how can you make it to mincha Ma'ariv? So maybe the concern wasn't as great. Something like that. Yeah?
There are satellite minyanim in different homes throughout neighborhoods on Friday night and also Motzei Shabbos.
But right.
Friday night particularly, it's almost like a minyan kavua.
Meaning they meet every week.
Right. But it's, would they say, like who?
So the Rav Moshe Feinstein in the Tshuva discusses that, and he says, well, if you have a minyan kavua, the Prima Gadim says it depends whether or not you have a Sefer Torah. The later Achronim say, why should it make a difference if you have a Sefer Torah? Even if I have a Sefer Torah in a hotel, and I'm just meeting for a one-time minyan, or a, you know, once in a week of vacation, so that's not really, that doesn't really create a minyan kavua. Again, if the whole rationale for doing it is because people are coming from all over, so if you have a minyan sheina kavua, it shouldn't apply. I think the general understanding is if you have a minyan kavua, even if it's in somebody's house, that turns into a Beis HaKnesses, that turns into a shul, and we assume that that is considered a minyan kavua, unless, again, we had a couple of years ago when I was living in, when I was in Far Rockaway, we had a shaila that there was somebody who was ill, so they made a minyan in his house, and then they were trying to figure out, well, how long should we continue the minyan? Every week they were sending out emails, well, this week the minyan's on, next week the person's in the hospital, the next week he's off, he's on, so in a case like that, that's not a minyan kavua, and then, unfortunately, the person passed away, the minyan stopped that week, the minyan was over, the only reason they made it was for this person to be able to daven with a minyan. Something like that is not called a minyan kavua. It's just on a touch-and-go basis. It depends how the person's feeling. That's not a minyan kavua. But if you have somebody whose home is the place where everybody meets every Friday night, I think that's considered, Rav Moshe says, I think that that's considered a minyan kavua, and you would be able to say vayichulu in a case like that. Yeah?
But you have satellite minyanim that rotate houses.
Uh-huh. So I don't know. Rav Moshe never even imagined such a thing. So now we get to a very important issue, and that is halakas neiros Shabbos in a hotel.
Mm-hmm.
That's a very important question, and certainly if you have a Sefer Torah in the room, it might take on the status of a Beis HaKnesses, unless we assume there is such a concept as something that's made ala tanai. So let's say I have a house, and I just give over the room, I designate this room because I want to do a favor for the neighbors, and it's too far for them to walk to shul, you know, in the winter, it's too far for them to walk in the cold. So I do everybody a favor, and I say, you know what, we're going to meet in my basement. But it was ala tanai, it was with the understanding that I don't want to give up this room as a Beis HaKnesses. We still want to sleep in the room, we still want to do different things in the room. Happens to be on Friday night when everyone comes to visit, so we turn it into a Beis HaKnesses. So if it was made ala tanai, there is such a concept that Gemara says in Megillah, we have such a concept as a Beis HaKnesses that's made ala tanai. If you have such a thing, so then again, it doesn't take on the status of a Beis HaKnesses. But at the same time, then you lose out the factor of davening in a Beis HaKnesses. Again, we all want to daven in a Beis HaKnesses that our tefillah should be answered. And we have a higher chance of our tefillah being answered if we daven with a tzibur in a Beis HaKnesses with a Sefer Torah. So if we start chipping away at all those factors, slowly, slowly we're going to chip away at our chances of our tefillahs being answered as well. So that's something to consider as well. We also have the concept of Berovam Hadras Melech. So even though you have breakaway shuls all over the place, but we have a concept of Berovam Hadras Melech, which is a very important concept. We find the Gemara has it in three different contexts. Berovam Hadras Melech doesn't always mean the same thing. Berovam Hadras Melech sometimes means when you have a lot of people who need to perform a mitzvah, and each one individually needs to do it. For example, Tefillah B'Tzibur, or for example, we have many different things like that. So Berovam Hadras Melech dictates that we should all gather together and do it in one shot. We should have the most people possible together in one shul. That's Berovam Hadras Melech. We have another Berovam Hadras Melech where you have one person has to perform a mitzvah, where you have everybody has to perform a mitzvah, but one person is going to do it on behalf of all of us. For example, Mikra Megillah. So that's also Berovam Hadras Melech, even though only one person is reading the Megillah, but still, best is that everybody should come together to listen to the one person read the Megillah on behalf of all of us. And the third place you have it is when we're not involved at all. Let's say, for example, the Gemara says in Yuma Daf Ayin, you have the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur has to read passages from the Torah. He has to read passages in front of everybody who's in the Azara. Says the Gemara, even though it's not our mitzvah, it's his mitzvah, it's his opportunity to do a mitzvah, it's his performance, yet we're still told, Berovam Hadras Melech dictates, he should do that in the presence of many people. What do you mean? Why does it enhance his mitzvah just because I'm standing by and listening? What you see is, Berovam Hadras Melech sometimes means, if all of us have an obligation to do a mitzvah, we should all come together to do it. Second opportunity of Berovam Hadras Melech is if one person is going to perform the mitzvah on behalf of all of us, then we may as well all do it together, like Mikra Megillah, like Neres Chanukah. And the third part of Berovam Hadras Melech is when you have one person performing his own mitzvah that has nothing to do with everybody else, there's also an idea of Berovam Hadras Melech in a case like that. So that's interesting, but either way, Berovam Hadras Melech, we assume, is an important concept, and that's why Splinter Minyanim are very questionable in the first place, even not on vacations, just on a regular Shabbos. You only have 15-20 people at a minyan instead of coming to a shul where you have a few hundred people, so it's a little bit questionable about Berovam Hadras Melech in a case like that. We get to the next issue. Any questions?
Why would you go to shul?
Yeah.
A shul that has 20 families, members, 30 families, why would you join a big shul?
So again, for some people a big shul doesn't do it for them. For some people a big shul takes away from their kavana. For some people a big shul is not good for the children. For some people they can't really pay attention. There's too much going on, too much commotion. I, you know, sometimes it's a lot of commotion here. So I understand it. So, you know, if it makes you have more kavana, but again, if you're going, if you have a choice to go to a shul where you're going to have, you know, more people than just in a little basement minyan, it's something to think about because of the idea of Berovam Hadros Melech. Let's talk about Halakas Neir Shabbos in a hotel. Now, this is a very important question. Halakas Neir Shabbos, there are three reasons why we light Shabbos candles. Shabbos candles, number one, is because of Kavod Shabbos. Number two is because of Oneg Shabbos. Number three is because of Shalom Bayis. What exactly does that mean? So Kavod Shabbos means, the Vilna Gaon says, the difference between Kavod Shabbos and Oneg Shabbos is anything that one does in preparation for Shabbos, anything that somebody does before Shabbos begins, that's called Kavod Shabbos. That's honoring Shabbos. And in anticipation of the honor of Shabbos, I do X. I do a certain activity to show how much I honor Shabbos. Any enjoyment that I have on Shabbos proper is part of the category of Oneg Shabbos. So therefore, the Beis Halevi writes, when you have Halakas Neir Shabbos, you have both the element of Kavod Shabbos as well as Oneg Shabbos, because I light Shabbos candles in advance of Shabbos, and I also enjoy the candles of Shabbos on Shabbos proper. I have light in my house, it adds to the ambiance, so therefore we assume that's both a fulfillment of Kavod Shabbos as well as Oneg Shabbos. This is why there are some who have the practice on Yom Tov evening, that the women sometimes, since on Yom Tov you're allowed officially to light candles, so some have the practice that on the first night of Yom Tov, they're going to wait to light the candles until the husband comes home. That's what some have the practice. And the Beis Halevi argues that it's not really correct. And the reason why it's not correct is because you lose that element of kavod. Yes, you're fulfilling Oneg Yom Tov because now you're going to enjoy the candles on Yom Tov itself, but you're losing out the element of doing something in preparation for Shabbos or Yom Tov. Therefore, you should make sure to do it before Yom Tov comes in. And he suggests that really that practice might be a little bit of a mistake to have the candles lit on Friday night. I'm sorry, Friday night obviously not, but to have the candles lit on Yom Tov night when everybody comes home from shul might not really be the proper practice. The third reason why we light Shabbos candles, the Gemara tells us in the second parak of Masechah Shabbos, is because of Shalom Bayis. Now, what does Shalom Bayis mean? You think it means the way we call Shalom Bayis? No, the Gemara says what Shalom Bayis means is Shelo Yikashel Ve'etzim Ha'avanim. You don't want to have a dark house, and then you're going to be tripping over the silverware, and you're going to be tripping over the couches and the tables and the chairs. What kind of enjoyment of Shabbos is that? You have to make sure to leave the lights on in order to fulfill the obligation of Shalom Bayis, that you should have a nice, peaceful, calm home, and people shouldn't be tripping over everything and falling and hurting themselves. That's why we leave the lights on for Shabbos. So these are the three reasons. Based on that understanding, the Achronim say that when you have electric lights nowadays, so electric lights really can be the fulfillment of Halakas Neir Shabbos. So if a person goes, again, fluorescent is a whole different shaila, it might not really be considered a neir. The way my father describes it is, the same way if, let's say, you would have a jewel that lights up when you put it on the table and all of a sudden there's light in the room, you can't make a bracha l'hadlik neir shel Shabbos by putting the jewel on the table. That's not an act of hadlaka. However, if you're going to turn on the lights and we consider the lights, not fluorescent lights, we consider regular lights to be a real or, this is also not only with regard to hadlakas neir Shabbos, but we consider this to be an or also with regard to havdalah. They say that Rav Chaim Moser and the Briskerov and other gedolim used to specifically go out of their way to use a electric candle for an electric bulb for Havdalah to show everybody that they understood that electricity is considered a malacha on Shabbos of Havara. It's a real malacha on Shabbos, and it's also considered a requisite Halakas Neir Shabbos, and it's also considered good enough for Havdalah. So this is something to keep in mind. When we go to a hotel, so you want to know, how do you light Shabbos candles? So number one, if you're going to light in your hotel room against the hotel's wishes, that's obviously not permitted. You're not allowed to make a bracha, and you're certainly not allowed to do that in the first place, because you're going against the simple understanding of what you signed up to when you took a room in the hotel. The hotel says no lighting fires. If you're going against their wishes, you are called a ganav, a gazlan. You're going against the wishes of the person who gave you the room, and therefore you have no right to do that. You certainly have no right to make a bracha. So what should you do? You cannot be mevatel the mitzvah of Halakas Neir Shabbos. So the answer is, what one should do is, you should turn on the lights in preparation for Shabbos, and you can recite a bracha on the Hadlakas Neir Shabbos. This is what Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky used to do. This is what Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, they say, used to do. This is what Rav Moshe Feinstein used to do. They would recite a bracha on the electric lights on Shabbos. Why? Because again, as long as I have electric lights on, I fulfill, number one, Kavod Shabbos, number two, Oneg Shabbos, number three, Shalom Bayis. So therefore, I consider that to be a fulfillment of my requirement of Hadlakas Neir Shabbos. Now, sometimes you go to a hotel, and what they do is they set up downstairs. Let's say you go on a program, so they'll set up downstairs outside of the dining room or in some corner in the lobby a big table full of candles. That is nothing short of a bracha levatalah. Why is that? Nothing short of a bracha levatalah. It's clear. This is written by every single gadol across the spectrum in the last 50 years, wrote the same thing. Rav Avadi Yosef, Rav Shlomo Zalman, Rav Moshe, every single gadol across the spectrum wrote the same thing. What is the reason? They say as follows. The Shulchan Aruch says in Siman Reish Samaches and Hilchos Halakas Neir Shabbos. Shulchan Aruch says, Bezo Gimel Balabatim Ochlim B'Makom Echad. Let's say you have two or three families eating in one place. So that happens all the time. You have a bunch of people eating together on Friday night. Yesh Omrim says the Shulchan Aruch Shekol Echad Mevarech HaMenorah Shalo. Some say, each family has the right to make a bracha to light their own candles because it's three families eating together. Let each one write the Neir Shabbos. The Yesh Megam Gem Bedavar says the Shulchan Aruch, there are those who say, you really shouldn't do that. Says the Shulchan Aruch, I'm a little nervous. It's a Safik Bracha Levatela. I don't know what to do. So you know what? Let's get out of the Shaila. Let one person line on behalf of everybody, and that's good enough. Says the Raman, no. Abel Anu Ein Noagin Kein. We don't have the practice like the Shulchan Aruch says, which means what? In which direction? We all light. Says the Raman, we have the practice that even if you have Bezo Gimel Balabatim lighting together, everybody should light, make their own Bracha, and it's wonderful. What do you see from the Raman? You see that ribui ha'ar, just because one person lit, it doesn't mean another person cannot add to the light that's already here. So just because you lit your Shabbos candles doesn't mean that I, the second family, shouldn't light Shabbos candles as well. And therefore, the same way you're allowed to make your bracha on the Shabbos candles, I'm also allowed to make my bracha on the Shabbos candles. The Ramaz of the opinion that you are able to be mevarech on ribui ha'ar, on the fact that you're adding a little bit of additional light into the room, that's a good enough reason to recite a bracha on your own. However, the Achronim say it's not clear exactly what the Ramaz means. At what point do we say ribui ha'ar is really not really adding any light? So let's say you're in a hotel and they have 200 Shabbos candles all on one table. Well, the Ramah says over here, Bezo Gimel Balabatim, you have two or three families. Each family that you're eating with has two candles. Okay, so my two candles are actually going to add some light. When I have 100 or 200 candles all on one table, what am I really adding? The Ramah himself would never have said that you're allowed to do it in a case like that. That's not ribui ha'ar. You're not adding anything. And not only that, the halacha is one has to have hana from the candles. So very often they'll put these candles out in the corner somewhere where you can hardly even breathe because there's so much smoke coming up from the table and it's very hot and it's very warm and nobody's really sitting there and doing anything. And you're not having your Shabbos meal there and you're not davening there, so you're not really doing anything. You light the Shabbos candles, stay for 2 minutes and you run away. You go to eat your meal or you go to daven, whatever you're going to do. So this is a major shaila whether or not that it would even be considered in the first place to be a fulfillment of the requirement of lighting Neiris Shabbos. This is why it's a major, major shaila. Rav Moshe writes, I'll read you his lashon, he says, Yesh la'ayin, bizman hazeh she'or ha'neiris mamish, nowadays when we have real light in the room, so what am I adding? What would the Ramah say, what am I adding? In a regular house, in my house on a regular Shabbos, what am I adding when I light the Shabbos candles? What kind of addition am I making? Why am I making a bracha l'hadlik ner shel Shabbos? What am I enhancing at all for the experience of Shabbos? Says Rav Moshe, maybe you'll say it's ribui ha'or that comes from the candles. No, ein bazeh klum, says Rav Moshe. What do you mean? You're not adding anything. It's light without my candles. I can have a fine Shabbos meal without the candles. So what right, asks Rav Moshe, do I have to make a bracha on my Shabbos candles on a regular Friday night in my own house? So that's a major question. How do we deal with that? So Rav Soloveitchik suggested, Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky said the same thing. This is what they say in the name of Rav Moshe as well. In a regular Shabbos in our own homes, what we should do is the following. We should turn off the lights in the dining room. Then we should turn the lights back on, light our candles, and our bracha really goes on everything. Because really, the fulfillment of our major requirement of Hadlakas Neir Shabbos nowadays is really on the electric lights. Our little candles that we light really don't add anything. So therefore, Moshe is of the opinion, and others say the same thing as well, that's what a person should do at home. Well, certainly when you go to a hotel, and you don't have the option or the luxury of turning off the lights in the dining room and doing all the shtick and then lighting your own candles, and certainly, normally in a hotel, they don't let you light in the dining room itself anyway. So there are major, major reservations and major questions whether or not a person is even able to recite a bracha or light candles downstairs in the lobby. Therefore, Rav Moshe said when he went to a hotel, what he did was, his wife used to make the bracha upstairs on the lights, on the electric lights in his room, and she did not used to rely on the candles that were lit downstairs. That's something that I think is worthy of being aware of. And it's something for us to think about. Now, nowadays, a lot of the hotel rooms don't even have lights that are not LED or fluorescent. Right? Is that what you were about to ask? And there's somebody who asked me that they went on a cruise, and on a cruise also, it's not so simple to find lights that are not fluorescent or LED. So, if you know that you're going away in advance, you should do something to make sure that you take care of that. So one very easy thing to do, which I always do whenever we go away, is you just bring along a bulb. Change the bulb in the bathroom, it's very easy. And then once you put in a regular bulb, your Shabbos candles can be lit on a regular bulb. If you don't want to do that, you can buy those little night lights that you plug into the wall, and you can just plug those in, and that will be a good enough Halachas Neir Shabbos. We'll get to the questions. Yeah.
So can you use the light in the bathroom to make the bracha?
Yes. Obviously, you have to make sure not to make the bracha in the bathroom. In the bathroom. But you certainly can, or you can use the closet light, something like that. Something that you're going to get some hana from. Rav Moshe even says, and it's something to think about. So often, let's say we go out to eat on a Friday night. So you're going to light your candles in the house, and then you go out to eat. So Rav Moshe says, what right do you have to make the bracha? By the time you get 3-4 hours later, the candles are already out. So you don't really have any pleasure, any benefit from it. So what right do you have to make a bracha? L'hadlik ner shel Shabbos, what have you done? You didn't even enjoy anything. You weren't even in the house. Rav Moshe says, it's better. It's better, he says, to have in mind when you say L'hadlik ner shel Shabbos, to have in mind that your bracha is really going on the electric lights, because that's really, nowadays, that's really how we enhance our Kavod Shabbos, our Oneg Shabbos, and our Shalom Bayis aspect of the Neir Shabbos that we're supposed to have. Just one second, yeah?
What was the Eitza that Rav said? You should turn off the light and then turn it back on. What was the reason to turn it off and on?
So again, if you're going to light your Shabbos candles at a time when there's just lights in the room, so then what are you gaining? So that's why Rav Soloveitchik suggested...
Turn it on after the light the candles.
Or right before. You turn them off, and then everything that I'm doing now is subsumed under the bracha of the Hadlik Neir Shel Shabbos. So if I do it right before I light my Shabbos candles, I'm good. My bracha goes back on everything. Yeah?
Can't the hana aspect of it just be the beauty of the light instead of the actual physical lighting up the room?
You're saying it adds to the ambiance. It adds to the ambiance. So that's a good question. The question really comes, Reb Shlomo Zalman Auerbach raises that question, because if you take this logic a little bit further, so what do we do on Yom Tov? How do we light candles on Yom Tov? And this is a big problem, because on Yom Tov, when we don't have the opportunity to turn the lights off, so what do we do then? Right? Second night of Yom Tov. So what do you do? So this is a question that was raised by some of the Gedolim of the last generation. So Shlomo Zalman Auerbach said the answer is, what you do on Yom Tov is, well, it adds to the ambiance anyway. So since it adds to the ambiance of Shabbos or Yom Tov, I'm not going to have my Shabbos candles. How can I have a Shabbos? It doesn't make sense to have a Shabbos like that. So that's what Shlomo Zalman says. That's a good enough reason to be mechalel Yom Tov and light the candles, because it adds to the ambiance, and we know it won't be the same Shabbos without the candles. Other Acharonim said, what do you mean? That's not a good enough excuse. That's not a good enough reason. How can that be the reason? So if I think it adds to the ambiance to have, you know, whatever it is on my table, to have, you know, all sorts of things, I'm just allowed to do malacha. If I think it adds to the ambiance to have new fresh flowers, I'm allowed to go outside and pick flowers on Shabbos and Yom Tov because I think it adds to the ambiance. Of course you're not allowed to do that. So what right do you have to violate a malacha just because you think it adds to the ambiance? So Rav Moshe said, no, the reason why on second night of Yom Tov you're allowed to light is because, well, we all know that there are blackouts all the time, and we always have to end up relying on the candles. So therefore, he says, we always have to light candles just in case there's going to be a blackout. Maybe that was in 1950, but nowadays, I don't know the last time we had a blackout just on a regular Shabbos when there was no storm outside. So this is why Rav Shlomo Zalman's rationale for second night of Yom Tov is very questionable. So you have to think about it. Rav Moshe's rationale is very questionable. Rav Moshe said, well, maybe you should make the Shabbos... took a Shabbos clock, put it on a timer so that when you light the Yom Tov candles on second night of Yom Tov, your electric lights are going to be off, and then by the time you light the candles and they're already lit and you made your bracha, then the lights are going to go back on a few minutes later. Well, if you don't believe in Shabbos clocks, like Rav Moshe didn't believe in Shabbos clocks, you're back to the problem. So anyway, we have a lot to talk about, but basically this is something to consider. When you go away to a hotel for Shabbos, you have to think about how are you going to fulfill your obligation of Hadlakas Neir Shabbos. So either, if you're in a hotel that allows you to light Shabbos candles in the room, little tea lights, so matov manan, so go light the Shabbos candles as long as they're still going to be lit by the time you get back to your room. If you're not going to be in a hotel that's going to allow you to do that, which is probably most of the times you're going to be in a situation like that, so then you should think carefully before you leave about how exactly you're going to fulfill your obligation of Hadlakas Neir Shabbos. Again, either bring along a light bulb, which is a non-fluorescent bulb, or you could bring along a plug-in, something like that, and you certainly would be able to recite a bracha of the Hadlik Neir Shel Shabbos on that. Amir Tz Hashem, next week we'll continue. Yeah.